Kia ora, welcome to Amrit's Podcast, episode 348. Today is Tuesday, July 9, 2019. Well, here we are in the second half of 2019. Where has this year gone? The actual midpoint of the year, as probably everybody in the world knew except for me, was last week on Tuesday, July 2nd. And that's because it's the 183rd day of the year, which means that there's 182 days before it and 182 days after it. And the only reason I found that out was because I was looking it up for my blog. I wanted to do a blog post on that. And it was also a way for me to check up to see how I'm doing on my annual average, which is a goal of an average of one post per day over the course of a year. And of course, I'm not meeting that goal, but doing better than other years, blah, 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 blah. The point is that I looked it up only because of that. And so I found out what probably everybody else in the world already knew, except for me. And of course, I blogged about that, that midpoint, and I'll put a link in the show notes. But it has been quite a while since my previous episode, and the usual reasons. I've been extremely busy, but also I've been extremely tired, and I'll talk about that later on. But first, I have something in the news here in New Zealand that will potentially affect any number of listeners of the Airman's Podcast, and that is that from October 1st of this year, October 1st, 2019, people visiting New Zealand, or transit passengers as well, will require something they're calling the NZETA, and the E is in lowercase. And that stands for New Zealand Electronic Travel Authority. And anybody coming to, any traveler coming to or through New Zealand will have to have one before they're allowed to depart. And that includes people passing through Auckland International Airport as a transit passenger, usually on their way to or from Australia. And but if they're going anywhere else, theoretically too. And this applies to people from a visa waiver country, which is actually most of the countries that supply tourists to us, like the US, Canada, the UK, and so on. And what that means is they don't need to get a tourist visa or a visitor visa or whatever it's called before coming here. They can get it at the airport. And anyone who isn't from a visa waiver country would have to get the visa in advance. And I presume that the travel document or whatever that thing would be called would be part of that. Be that as it may, the travel authority, the NZETA, is valid for as many visits as you like, pretty much, up into for two entire years, which is really quite generous, in my opinion. Now, it doesn't apply to Australian citizens, or New Zealand citizens, obviously. And one of the things that struck me about it is that they tell you that to allow 72 hours for processing, but it could take as little as 10 minutes. And I hope that that's actually true, because if that's true, that's amazingly good service. So it's not terribly expensive. It's $9 if you use their free app, or $12 if you do it online. Now, I have no idea why they have a differential fee structure. And I don't know if that little amount of money is enough justification for somebody downloading an app. But I haven't looked into it myself, since I don't need one. But I suspect that the app also embeds the authorization or whatever, so that you can show that at the border. I don't know, but it would make sense to me if it does. And if any of you are planning a trip to New Zealand, you might want to look into it to see if that's the case. But at any rate, that does take effect from October 1st. But on July 1st, there was a new requirement, I guess is the word, that came into effect. It's actually a tax. It's called the International Visitor Conservation and Tourism Levy. And who has to pay it and under what circumstances does vary a little bit. And the people who don't have to pay it are people who travel on an Australian passport, or obviously a New Zealand passport, or from several Pacific Island nations. A transit passenger who is arriving at and leaving from Auckland International Airport doesn't have to pay. So in other words, if you're flying to Sydney and you are stopping over in Auckland at the airport just to change planes or whatever, you don't have to pay it. New Zealand permanent residents don't have to pay it. And those who have a business visitor visa or an APEC business travel card, I have no idea what that second one is. I presume it has something to do with Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum thing that many countries are part of. The U.S. is part of it, too. But anyway, it's a Pacific regional thing, so it's probably one of those perks. But anyway, when you can pay it, when you request that NZETA I talked about, or if somebody isn't from a visa waiver country, they can apply for it. Now, what it's for, this is what they say on the Immigration New Zealand website. It says, the number of visitors coming to New Zealand has grown strongly, over the past few years, and growth is expected to continue. The IVL, which is the International Visitor Levy, is your contribution to maintaining the facilities and natural environment you will use and enjoy during your stay. That's true. But there's actually a little bit more to it than that. Because the visitor numbers have been growing so much, the stress and strain on the natural environment of New Zealand has started to become apparent. And so they basically need to raise more money to cater for that. And it's kind of a user pays thing. In other words, you know, these people are coming to New Zealand, they're enjoying our natural environment. It seems only fair that they should pay something toward maintaining the environment that they're coming to visit, and the wildlife too, for that matter. So that's what it's for. And it's, I don't remember if I said, but it's $35. And I don't know, it doesn't say on the website, as far as I can see, if it is good for just one trip or several, I don't know. But because you can get it with your NZETA, I presume it could be good for up to 2 years. I don't know. It's probably on the website somewhere. If you go to apply for it in NZETA, it'll probably tell you that. So if you pay the $9 or $12 for the NZETA, you can pay the $35 for the IVL at the same time, and you're set. Now, here's the thing about this that struck me the other day. This is the first time in my life that I actually get an advantage from being an expat. And that's because of this. I have a New Zealand passport, obviously, and I have a U.S. passport, probably obviously. I've talked about it enough. And the USA has a similar electronic travel document thing. They've had it for a couple of years, I think it is, or maybe longer, I'm not really sure. Since it didn't affect me, I never paid attention. But anybody from, say, from New Zealand who's going to the U.S. has to get one of these things in advance. And now it's going to be, we're going to return the favor, and Americans are going to need one to come here. But because I have a U.S. passport and a New Zealand passport, that means I don't need to get one of those things when I travel to the U.S., and I don't need to get one when I travel back to New Zealand. And I'm the only one I know who can say that. I mean, apart from other Americans, obviously, because Australians going to the U.S. have to get one, but they don't need to get one to come to New Zealand. But if they're traveling from New Zealand to the U.S., they would need one of those electronic thingies. And an American citizen coming here would need to get one, get an NZETA to come here, but wouldn't need one to go home, obviously. So I get the advantage from both of them in this case, because I'm a U.S. citizen, I don't need one for the USA, and because I'm a New Zealand citizen, I don't need one from New Zealand. And I cannot think of another advantage I've ever had as an expat apart from this program. And it's kind of nice in that sense. I wish that they weren't making it harder to travel the U.S. and other countries, but you know, it is what it is. That's what this modern world is all about. And we can't really do much about that at the moment. Some of it is about security. Some of it is about other things. I don't know what the agendas of various countries are. But it certainly does raise money for the various countries. And as I said, I'm exempt. And I kind of like that. It's probably the only advantage I'll ever get from being an expat. But anyway. Now, there has been some stuff, other stuff in the news lately. I've talked about Pike River several times. There's no new news on that. They made it something like 130 meters in, I think it was, and before they get to the next barrier that they have to remove. But sometime over the next few months, they expect to get down to where they think the explosion happened and to try to find out what happened. That's the main reason for the whole reentry. It's not just about trying to recover bodies, if that's possible, although they do want to. So that's been in the news, and I'm not going to bother putting a link to that because it's not particularly current. But there was an incident recently that was one of those things that made me go, what the, and roll my eyes at the same time. It was the Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern and her partner Clark Gayford, their daughter Neve's first birthday was recently. And for some reason, the right wing freaked out about it. And I, for the life of me, I can't figure out why. The prime minister decided she was going to bake a cake for Neve's first birthday. And I've blogged about this as well, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But the gist of it is that they just were attacking her for making a cake. Now, I included a couple of the most minor examples in my blog post. Those were the PG-rated versions. There were some that were really quite foul in their language. Now, of course, these days, social media is the place where discourse goes to die. You cannot have a rational conversation on social media anymore unless it's people you actually know, because the whole thing has become a toxic swamp filled with bots and troll accounts, and you can never tell who's real and who's not. And a lot of the stuff that's said is just really offensive for the sake of being offensive sometimes, and for sowing discord and all that sort of stuff. So you have to take all of this sort of stuff with a grain of salt, because a lot of the stuff that people are saying, were saying about the prime minister and her cake, were from people who may not even be real, or at least not who they say they are, you know, the troll accounts and so on. But even so, it was a weird thing to pick to attack her with. You know, of all of the things that somebody could and do, and they do attack her over, baking a cake does not, to me, seem like the most logical one to pick. But there you go. So I still am a bit WTF about that one, because it seems, for any of the real right-wingers out there, it seemed like an own goal to criticize her over that, because it was such a stupid thing to do. But, you know, they have their own, they live in their own world. And speaking of right-wingers living in their own world, I've talked several times about the ACT Party, which is a neoconservative or neoliberal, if you prefer. It's usually called neoliberal in this part of the world, a political party. They're only in parliament by the grace of the National Party, which gifted them one of their safe seats so that they could get an MP into parliament. They haven't brought any other ones with them for, I don't know, 9 years? No, more than that, probably. Probably 12 years, I think. I'd have to look it up. I don't remember. But they recently decided to rebrand themselves, and they're now calling themselves the Freedom of Speech Party. And it is weird. What they're doing, essentially, is they're backing the right of any extremist to say whatever they want under any circumstances, virtually. And they're attacking anybody else, including people on the right, who don't support their viewpoint. And I don't understand where they're going with this. There's a small rump of people in New Zealand who believe that free speech is absolute and you can never restrict it under any circumstances whatsoever. Now, that's not the case in any other country, including the USA. There are many cases in which free speech can be restricted. And, of course, in the U.S., the First Amendment only applies to government. It doesn't apply to private businesses or private organizations. They can have whatever restrictions they want, quite legally. And here in New Zealand, there are some areas that are already prohibited. You can't incite racial violence, for instance. That's not legal. But beyond that, it's pretty much whatever goes. What got the ACT Party's knickers in a twist is that after the Christchurch mosque shooting, there were proposals to make New Zealand's hate speech laws explicit, so that it's very clear what hate speech is and under what circumstances it would be illegal or sanctioned in some way and so on. And they're dead set opposed to that, because they say that any regulation of speech is a slippery slope. I hate that argument, but it's a slippery slope toward outlawing all sorts of speech. Now, whether or not a hate speech law is a good thing or a bad thing is an entirely different issue. There is no proposal for a law at this moment, so we're talking about nothing in particular. But they have nevertheless put their flag in the sand, or whatever to mix metaphors, over this as their defining issue. And as I said, I can't see where they're going with this. There isn't a huge groundswell of opposition, or let me rephrase that. There isn't a huge groundswell of support for that idea. People don't perceive the right wing as being threatened in any way, or the left wing either, for that matter. They don't see speech as being under attack. So I have a tough time seeing what they're going to be able to do other than stir up the right wing in New Zealand, most of whom vote for the National Party at the moment. So I don't know. I can't see what their end game is. I'm sure that they have, well, I'm not sure, but I suppose that they have some goal in mind, probably to increase their votes so they can get another MP. But I just can't see how they're going to get enough votes nationwide to get another MP. I think it's a dumb idea, but that's what they're doing. They're trying to differentiate themselves from national, and that's going to work, I'm sure. But it, like I said, it just seems like a really dumb idea. But, you know, they didn't ask me, did they? They should have, but they didn't. And I mentioned also previously that there was a supposed Christian party that was going to be starting. One of them didn't, and the other is, well, said it was, and it just hasn't amounted to anything. There recently was an attack against that that was made through a press release by some sort of socialist organization. And they were making outrageous claims about the Labour Party. The Labour Party would do a deal with the, it's called Destiny Church, their party. And that's just absurd, because the values of the husband and wife who run that, they're called the Tamakis, are absolutely antithetical to that of the Labour Party. And sure, there are a couple of conservatives in the Labour Party, but nothing like that. And it's just nonsense to suggest that the Labour Party is going to do a deal with the Tamakis and their pet party just to get in power or whatever. It's just absurd. And I thought, you know, it struck me as mischief making more than anything else, because what they were trying to do was to get the left to abandon Labour, and they would hope go toward them. Although there is a long history since I've been in New Zealand anyway, that ardently left parties don't do well. They just simply don't. What does well are center left, like the Labour Party, or somewhat further left, like the Green Party. But anything on the further ends just don't do well at all, because most New Zealanders, like most Americans, are somewhere closer to the center. And so it ended up just being mischief making, and for no good that I could see whatsoever. In more close to home news, last week, July 3rd, was our girl Sunny's 11th birthday, which was a bigger deal to us than to her, obviously. But nevertheless, she's 11, and Jake is 12, and Leo is 2, because he had his birthday in June. I had to hesitate because I still haven't really learned it. Because he was already almost one when he came to live with us. And so this is the first birthday, second birthday he's had with us, but the first full year that he's lived with us. He's actually sleeping on my lap right at this moment, and Sonny is under my desk. Jake is upstairs where it's warmer. And so that's it from family news. Now, at the start, I talked about how I've been busy lately. Well, that's nothing new. I'm always busy doing something or other. But the other thing I said is that I've been extremely tired. And that is down to this drug I'm taking, this amiodarone, or however you say that. It keeps my heart rate in the 50s or 60s, which is really quite low. And I'm sure that that is actually what is making me so tired. And when I say really tired, I'm not exaggerating. I can sit down in my chair and not move for an hour or two. Well, I mean, not get up for an hour or two. And I, in the evening, after dinner, I'll be sitting watching the news and whatever programs are in the evening, and I will doze off. And when I go to bed, I'll have 9 hours of sleep, sometimes more, and I wake up feeling like I didn't get any, or virtually none. And so this is my reality. This is what I live with every single day. I am absolutely bone tired all day. It does affect my memory. It's not as bad as the beta blockers in some ways, because I don't feel quite so muddle-headed. But it does affect me, particularly in the evening, where I've learned that if I don't do a blog post in the daytime, I'm probably not, or start one anyway, I'm not likely to do one in the evening. And so that requires better planning on my part and all that sort of stuff, which I'm not particularly good at normally, planning. So I don't know where this is headed. I do know that I'm not happy on this drug, and I'm thinking that I may go to them and ask them to consult with a cardiologist, go to my doctors, and ask them to consult with the cardiologists and see about maybe putting me back on beta blockers, the last one I was on, which is Atenolol. And the reason I think I'm going to do that is because I was very tired on that drug, but not nearly as tired as I am on this one. My memory was bad, probably almost equivalent. It's probably a bit worse than this. And my mind was definitely fuzzier than it is now. But it's the tiredness I can't cope with because I can't get anything done. I can't do any gardening. I sometimes have to plan for like 2 or 3 days before I make a trip to the grocery store because I've got to psych myself up for it. And this is just pointless. And this could go on for another 8 months. Well, not quite 7 months, maybe longer. And so, yeah, I think we have to make some sort of change, and I just don't know what it's going to be. Now, I talk about that at all because I've talked about all the rest of it, the good things and the bad things, and that this is one of the bad things. And, I mean, I'm coping. It's not like, you know, this is a, oh, woe is me kind of thing. I am coping. But I suppose it is kind of a warning to anyone who is considering, anyone who is facing a health challenge like this, to be prepared to speak up and to ask for things to be different. And that's what I plan on doing, whether anything changes or not, I don't know. I have to go get blood tests to see if this drug is hurting me. Oh, that's the other thing. I have to go to get some blood tests done, as I said, to see if this drug is hurting me. And then I have to do it every, I think it's 3 months afterwards or 6 months or whatever it is after that. 3 months, I think. And my thinking is that if this drug is so potentially toxic and it can damage my organs and it's making me feel so awful, why don't I use a different drug that also makes me feel awful but doesn't damage my organs? You know, I don't see what I'm getting out of this deal. So I'll certainly return to this topic in a few weeks after I know what's going on. Last time I talked about trying non-alcoholic wines because the pill I'm on causes liver damage, among other things, and so patients are advised to severely limit or avoid alcohol. And I decided to go with the avoid side of things. And so I tried these wines from Australia called Eden Vale. And it had the Chardonnay, which is actually quite nice. I blogged about all this, so you can read that if you really want to know what I thought about the wines. I'll put a link in the show notes. But the thing is that at first I had it as much, maybe, as I would have had real wine. And when we had visitors, I would have it with them. But since then, I really haven't had any. I've got a bottle in the fridge. It's been open, I think, for 2 or 3 weeks, probably three weeks, maybe a bit more, who knows. And I haven't finished it. And the reason is that I just don't see any point. All alcoholic beverages are essentially empty calories, and it doesn't really matter how much you enjoy it necessarily. It's still calories that don't really do anything for you. And it occurred to me that when I'm drinking non-alcoholic wine, it's basically empty calories, but there's no payoff. I mean, most people, when they drink wine, they get the pleasant effects that go along with that. And so there's sort of a point to it. But when you're drinking non-alcoholic wine, you don't get the payoff. It's just the empty calories. And I thought, I don't really need that. So I haven't been having it. But I did try it, and I thought it was really quite nice. And as I said, I did a blog post about various flavors that I tried. And it remains an option for whenever we have a social gathering, which is always a nice thing. Anyway, that's it for today. I hope you're well. I'm actually doing fine, apart from being tired. And I will update all of that in future episodes, no doubt. But that is it for today. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye. You can comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amrens, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's ARTHUR, at amrenspodcast.com. This podcast is recorded and distributed under a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.